And welcome to this week's edition of An Organic Conversation, a show about food, ecology, stories from the land, nature, relationships, and life itself. We are your hosts, Helge Hellberg,
Mark Mulcahy,
and Sitarani Palomar.
Our topic on today's show is community. We live in community. Friends, family, neighbors, colleagues, our town. Whether we know every single person or we like every person at all times does not really matter. We can't live without community. Well, most of us can't. Come together right now, redefining community, all that and more today on An Organic Conversation.
The concept of community is so broad, at least the definition is, right? Because community could mean your local community. It could mean your spiritual community. It could be your work community. So I'm excited to hear from our guests about how they define community and what the relationships are therein.
Yes.
Yeah. And, you know, when I used to be a produce manager, community could even be formed because of the place that you work and you not even know it.
Oh, and we have a perfect example of that. Yes. Today's show, Community, Redefining Community, come together right now.
But first, the green headlines with Jen Lloyd.
Thank you, Mark. The White House embraces seasonal eating. The White House has joined in the seasonal eating craze. According to the presidential chef, the menus at the White House have evolved to incorporate vegetables, often grown in the gardens on the South Lawn, as the star of the meal alongside the proteins. The change is largely inspired by Michelle Obama's healthy eating campaigns. The First Lady is the head of the Let's Move campaign for children, which encourages healthier diets at school and at home. California strengthens the clean air standards for cars. The California Air Resources Board has approved a historic new set of policies that will reduce air pollution and accelerate the market for electric cars, with a stated goal of bringing the technology to the mass market. The initiatives are slated to save Californians $22 billion by 2025, as well as creating 21,000 new jobs. It's also estimated that the average consumer will save $4,000 over the life of the average car sold in 2025 due to technology improvements. And furthermore, they will require oil companies to begin installing hydrogen refueling stations for fuel cell vehicles. And outdated coal plants shutting down under new regulations. First Energy Corp, the owner of almost 20 coal power plants in the Midwest, will be shutting down six of those plants by September. The shutdowns come in the wake of sweeping new EPA standards designed to reduce toxic emissions from coal facilities. First Energy has stated that the cost of bringing the outdated plants up to current regulations would be too high. It's estimated that while the shutdowns will cost jobs in the short term, the company's investments in clean energy will ultimately result in a net gain and a cleaner environment for everyone. And those are the green headlines. Back to you, Helga.
Thanks, Jen. Jen Lloyd, for this weekly update of what's going on in the world of green living and sustainability. You're listening to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg.
I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And I'm Sitarani Palomar.
And we'll take a quick break, but stay tuned for our first interview with Sam McGannum and learn how a natural food retail store is changing the world. Come together right now, redefining community, only here on An Organic Conversation. And we are back here to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg.
I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And I'm Sitarani Palomar.
Today's topic is redefining community. Come together right now. We thrive in community. It's the foundation of our need for safety, our need for exchange and interaction, our need for belonging. Studies have shown that when we are isolated and alone, our stress level increases and we are more prone to diseases. The joy of community is felt beautifully at farmers market days, and the power of community felt most when we come together after a disastrous event or emergency, or when people demonstrate on the streets, connected in spirit and heart. Our guests today are calling community back into our awareness and into action. From setting a tone and changing the spirit in a district in San Francisco, to empowering communities to create their own economic and cultural reality and future here in the U.S. and overseas, we are excited about today's show, Come Together Right Now. Our first guest today joining us from San Francisco is Sam Moganim, the owner and creator of Byright Market, a natural food retail store that is changing the world in San Francisco. Sam, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me, Helga.
It's wonderful. I had the pleasure to work with you in past years and to have you on the show now to talk about what Byright has come. This is, of course, right at the time when you just published your book, Eat Good Food, where you describe community and the power of community. Tell us about your inspiration about Byright, its intention, and why you founded it.
Well, Byright's been in my family for almost 50 years now. And, when I took over in 1997, I came out of a dozen years in the restaurant business. And, through the years of being a cook and a chef, I developed a very close relationship to food, mainly because I learned early on that food was destined to go into somebody's body and it was going to feed them. And it's a very intimate relationship and one that I feel more people need to take seriously. And so I applied that same principle of feeding people, of being a cook, to a grocery store. And I feel it was a different approach than many people were taking. It didn't matter to me whether we were preparing food in the kitchen and putting on platters to sell, or if we were picking a can of tomatoes to put on the shelf. Either way, it was something that was going to actually feed somebody. We wanted to make sure that we were feeding them well. We were buying it from somebody who was caring for their staff and for the land.
And feeding goes far beyond and food on the shelf, right? Tell us about the different ventures. It's really interesting. Byright is almost a community center at this point. You have retail, you have ice cream, there's an exhibit space. Describe what you're doing.
Yeah, I mean we're doing a lot. Sometimes I think too much.
Yeah, there was a sigh of exhaustion in your voice. Yes, but no, it's.
I'm lucky. I've got a tremendous team and a great staff that believes in our mission of creating community through food, and all of us really come together to do it and make it happen. The market's been in existence now for 14 years. About 5 years ago, we started our creamery, Byright Creamery. It's an ice cream shop. We were the first shop in San Francisco to use organic dairy, and we source all our milk and cream from the Strauss Family Creamery up in Marin, only about 35 miles away. And then about 4 years ago, we actually started farming. We started farming on a half an acre up in Sonoma and are currently now farming 2 acres in Sonoma, growing a lot of our own food. And also about 4 years ago, we founded 18 Reasons. And 18 Reasons is our community education nonprofit space, where through hands-on classes and lectures and tastings, we bring people together. We engage them. We inspire them. Get them to know not only each other and their fellow neighbors, but actually the people who are doing the work, who are out in the fields in the rural environment, growing the food. Just trying to just increase awareness of how valuable food is to preserving our local economies, to preserving our health, and ultimately to preserve our culture. We need a local food economy if we're going to maintain any sort of diversity in our world.
Yes.
So how has the community embraced Byright? You guys have all of these ventures that you're doing now. You touched a little bit on 18 Reasons and what 18 Reasons is doing, but can you tell us about how that's been received in the community?
What 18 Reasons or the businesses? Or
all of the
it?
Above.
Yeah, right on.
You're a San Francisco institution, so beloved.
It's kind of freaky, you know, that it's become this, you know. I'm just a grocer.
A grocer with a lot of heart, so much heart.
Yeah. But I feel every grocer needs to have heart. Now I feel like my mission is to change the perception of what a grocer's role should be in a community. You know, grocers should be an anchor. They should be an anchor not only in creating synergy for other businesses, but an anchor in rallying people together. You know, much in the same way that Yelga, you talked about in the power of a farmer's market. It brings people together and gets people to just engage with each other, to communicate, to share. And there's something powerful about that.
Yeah, the town square historically has always been the place where people just hang out and gather and eat food,
right,
and, you know, gather for the market day and all that. And then when we started to develop stores, and Mark, you have been in the produce department for decades, I'm sure people related to you as the person they knew beyond the avocado and the zucchini, right? I mean, that's like you're
their produce person, you're their grocer, you're their person. As a matter of fact,
you're the mayor of the town as a retailer.
You really are. They see you on the street, and it's like, oh my gosh, there's the organic produce guy. You know, and I'm sure Sam, you get the same thing, or your produce manager may get the same thing. It's almost within that community, people soon recognize you as, I don't know if you'd say one of the leaders, but one of the catalysts for creating community.
The
pillars, because you do have the storefront and the environment that you create there.
Yeah, I agree with you, Mark. You become a public figure of sorts. And you know, because we are in a brick and mortar, we're really accessible, and we want to be accessible. We're not, you know, we don't look at our, you know, we're not in a decentralized office somewhere making decisions that are going down to multiple units. You know, we're on our hands and knees. We're working. We're talking to our growers. We're talking to our guests. We're stocking product. And being part of it, doing it.
And we are talking with Sam McGannum, the founder of BuyRight Market, a San Francisco institution, a natural food retail store, and so much more that is changing the world in San Francisco and the world of retail, really, as an example of how community can be and perhaps shall be built in retail stores.
So we were talking about the town square, right? And I feel a little bit, Sam, like 18th Street is kind of the town square, because you've got BuyRight Market, and right across the street is BuyRight Creamy, where you get your ice cream. And is 18 Reasons around the corner from there too?
No, it used to be. We moved.
Oh, okay.
It's just two doors down from the Creamy now.
So
this is right on the same block.
Yep, there you go. Yeah. Town square on 18th Street.
It has become like a town square, you know. I mean, when we took over in 97, you know, most of the storefronts had metal bars on the windows. The neighborhood was tough. It was dangerous, and the Dolores Park, which, you know, has become kind of an iconic meeting place in San Francisco, was not a place for people to hang out then.
And now the community there has really, really opened their arms to what you're doing. Yes.
Yeah, I mean, it's on fire. I mean, you know, there are some days where we have lines out the door. You know, at the Creamery, it's a regular thing. But even sometimes at BuyRight, we need to queue people up outside, and it's really exciting to see people waiting to get into a grocery store.
That is beautiful. Yes.
It is, you know. I mean, the thing that I'm really, you know, most proud of, when we took over, there was only about 40 jobs on this block, and currently there's over 400.
Wow.
On one block of 18th Street, you know, and that's, you know, to me what a town square should be, right? There should be that one or two anchor tenants that really inspire other businesses to want to be part of it, and it creates that synergy that keeps people in their community,
all the
basic necessities there, so they don't have to get in their cars and drive, you know, to the big mall.
Yes,
and
absolutely.
You know, Sam, when I work with produce, organic produce departments all over the country, one of the first questions I ask them, I say, do people linger here?
Yeah.
And you know, some people say, well, there's no room for them to linger. Hmm. And I will use...
Oh, we don't want them to linger.
You know, or we don't want them to linger.
Do.
You know, and I'll use stores like, you know, yours and many stores that I've worked with around the country. I said that's exactly what you want them to do. And they said, there's no room. I said, there's always room to linger. If people want to converse with each other, even in the smallest space, they'll find a way to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Sam,
shopping shouldn't be a chore, and that I think that's one of the things that we're trying to change.
Yeah, something to get done. That's right. Sam, when did you in your personal life realize the importance of community, and or decided to have your entire business structured around that? What was the one moment? Or was it a gradual?
I mean, I feel really lucky how that came really early on for me. You know, I spent my childhood working at Bayreuth. You know, from the time I was 6 until 17, and my father and uncle were really community. They're very passionate about their community. I mean, my father would feed anybody who came in off the streets that was hungry. Whenever any of the older folks in the neighborhood called up and said, you know, they needed help getting groceries delivered, I would deliver it. If they needed help moving furniture, my dad would say, go help them. They need help, you know. And so he set an amazing example for me, and I didn't realize what an example he set until I got older. When I became a cook and I realized how powerful food was, just changed my relationship, not only to food, but changed my relationship to people. And it changed how I viewed food as a means of bringing people together. I wasn't looking at it as a tool as much as I was looking at it as energy.
Yes.
That ideally brought people together to synergize and to form relationships, right?
Yeah.
And you said earlier, you know, it's a need, you know, without it, you know, we're just not happy.
Yes, and you nourish on so many more levels than food, as we said in the beginning. You just released a book. What's the essence of the book, Eat Good Food, that just was published?
You know, there's I guess three main parts to Eat Good Food. It's a guide to shopping. You know, so I walk the reader through all the various departments of a grocery store and teach them, you know, what to look for, questions they should ask their butcher or their produce buyer. The produce seller, so that they can actually make better decisions shopping. It's also a cookbook. There's almost 100 recipes plus, you know, several other off-the-cuff kind of tips and recipes for them so that they can develop a more intuitive relationship to cooking. And it's also a story about how, you know, vital food is to sustaining and nurturing local communities.
Yes, community and personal health.
To go and, you know, develop those relationships with those various people that are selling you the food.
Well, if our listeners from all over the country come to San Francisco, do check out Bayreuth Market in the Mission District ice cream retail store exhibit space. And with us, Sam Morganum, the founder of Bayreuth Market, even though it's a family business for, what, 60 years, you said?
50 almost now.
50, yeah.
Sam, can you define community for you? You've been working in community in community your whole life. So what does it mean to you?
The way we define community at Bayreuth, it's fourfold. It's composed of four main stakeholders. It's our guests. It's the people who come and shop with us. It's our staff. It's the people that we buy our food from. It's all the producers, ranchers, cheesemakers, and vendors. And the fourth component is the environment. And all four members need to be treated equally well. And we depict it pictorially as an equilateral triangle with the earth as a circle surrounding it. And so no matter which way you turn it, nobody's at the top. Nobody's weighted more heavily than the other. Each member of the community is inextricably linked, and they all rely on each other for their own survival and sustenance.
That's beautiful.
And we do everything we can to sustain them.
The people you buy from, the people you sell to, the people that are actually selling, and the environment.
Right.
All equal parts of community.
It's vital for it to work.
Yes. Sam Morganum, again, the author of Eat Good Food. More information on buyrightmarket.com. That's B-I-R-I-T-E market.com. Sam Morganum, the founder and the author of Eat Good Food. Thanks for joining us today. Pleasure to have you.
Thanks for having me, Matt.
Thanks so much, Sam.
That's wonderful, the four pillars of community.
And
love
the enthusiasm,
it.
My Lord. He does this because he loves this. It's so clear.
Yeah,
wow.
What else would he do? Good. Good for us. Good for Sam. Bayreuth Market in San Francisco in the Mission District. Check it out if you can, or again, buyrightmarket.com.
And, you know, a couple things came up there for me is, you know, Dinesh Willey once taught me a quote where she said...
Who's that?
Dinesh Willey is a farmer for T&D Willey Farms down in Madera, California. Her product is sold all over the country. And she taught me at a very young age that a good deal is a good deal for all parties. And if you run your business that way, then you've taken care of everybody. And when I heard Sam talk about those pillars,
yeah.
I thought, oh, this resonates. This is completely exactly what Dinesh taught me a long, long time ago. And Helga, you mentioned if from around the country, if people want to know about Byright, he has people from all over the world come visit to look at his
model. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes, byrightmarket.com. You're listening to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helga Helberg.
I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And I'm Sita Rani Palomar.
And we are talking about community. Come together right now, redefining community, the businesses and the people that are changing our lives by redefining and calling into action and calling into awareness the power of community. More is lined up for you, but we'll take a quick break. Stay tuned for more.
I don't know if I can do this alone. Oh, after all our sweet love's flown, I've been a running, I've been skipping like a stone, and I don't know if I can do this alone. When I met her, she was standing by her door. I ain't never seen a light like that before. Now she's left me for something more sure. And I don't know if I can do this anymore.
My name is Earl Herrick, and I am the owner of Earl's Organic Produce, a San Francisco Bay Area distributor fully committed to organic produce. From the time one could find organic fruits and vegetables only in natural food stores to now, when schools and fine restaurants feature organic, we have been forging relationships with growers for over 20 years. If you want to offer the finest organic produce to your employees or customers, find us at earlsorganic.com. That's earlsorganic.com.
Fry Vineyards is America's first organic winery, family-owned and operated since 1980. Dedicated to the highest levels of organic and biodynamic farming, Fry never adds synthetic sulfites or other preservatives to their wines. Fry organic and biodynamic wines include delicious Cabernet Sauvignon, Zinfandel, Syrah, Chardonnay, and Sauvignon Blanc. Fry Vineyards Mendocino County award-winning wines, without added sulfites. Available at grocery stores and online at frywine.com. That's FREYWINE.com.
Hi, I'm Paul Piscopo, executive chef at the new signature restaurant, The W San Francisco, Trace. It's our farm-to-urban table concept, which means all of our ingredients are locally sourced, sustainable, and traceable back to their natural origins, ensuring a dedication to socially responsible cuisine. We look forward to seeing you soon at Trace. For reservations, visit trace-sf.com. That's trace-sf.com. Or call 415-817-7836.
Bowman College has been offering professional training in nutrition and the culinary arts since 1989. Natural chefs will learn to master a healthful approach to classic culinary techniques, while nutrition consultants become experts in client consultation and the promotion of individualized plans for optimal health. Bowman College, a leader in the field of holistic nutrition and culinary arts. To find out more, visit bowmancollege.org. That's B-A-U-M-A-N college.org.
And we are back here to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helge Helberg.
I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And I'm Sita Rani Palomar.
Today's topic on Organic Conversation is redefining community. Come together right now. We just heard from Sam McGannum, the founder of Byright Market in San Francisco, a natural food retail store, and so much more that is actually changing the world and changing the Mission District in San Francisco. And we have more guests lined up on this topic. But first, as always, here's the weekly produce update with our very own Mark Mulcahy, and what's in season?
And what's in season that we're going to talk about today are Mineola Tangelos. But first, let's head out to the market and talk to Earl Herrick from Earl's Organic Produce and find out, you know, what's going on there at the market with these. Hey, Earl, are you there?
Yeah. Hey, how y'all doing?
Great, great.
Hey, Earl, great. Good to hear from you.
Well, you know, You know, every morning I walk the docks of the San Francisco market, and as you walk down the dock, you have all these different houses, you know, companies, if you will. And what they do, they display, they have pallets of produce all lined up and down the docks.
Mm.
And they have
beautiful.
On the top of the pallets, they have all the cases opened up. So they're displaying everything. And what I see right now as I walk down the docks, everything's orange.
Everything's coming up oranges?
You have been mentioning that the last few weeks, for
wow.
sure.
Yes.
So last week we're talking about carrots, and now it's citrus, as it has been for a while. But what we're really hitting is the middle of a variety that I like a lot, and this is the perfect time to be doing it, and that's a Mineola.
Cool.
Now, yeah, the Mineola is a Tangelo, and it's that curious fruit with a distinctive knob on it. And a Tangelo is a grapefruit mandarin hybrid, and the flavors reflect that parentage. So, you know, when you have a season that lasts from January through April into May, and it travels from a dry desert to the moderate coast, you know, flavors range from tart to sweet and with rich complex combinations, you know, throughout the season. So right now you're going to be hitting that Mineola at a place where the tartness is merging with the sweetness, and it's fantastic. I'm going to keep on going here. The Mineola is very juicy. You know, it's deep interior and exterior color. It has a few seeds, maybe. It's got firm skin. It's easy to peel. Pretty great stuff. And it's grown not only in California. It's grown in Florida and Arizona.
And is it a good year throughout the country
for
citrus?
Yes, it is. Because it's got that great combination right now. There's not a lot of rain, so you don't have to fight the problems that rain can give you. And it's got a great cold night. And actually, citrus prefers kind of cloudy skies. So we might be lacking a little bit in the cloudy sky part. But I would say if this isn't perfect, it's near perfect season.
So funny that for some, you know, agriculturalists, not having rain is a disaster, and then for others, it's exactly what you want.
Yeah,
beautiful.
Really, yeah, that.
Go ahead, Mark.
Well, I was just going to say, and it, you know, when they are at this sweet tart combination that you're talking about now, is like this is. I usually don't even eat Mineolas until this time of year. I'm kind of a Mineola snob that way, but they actually make an amazing juice.
You know, I was talking to a grower the other day, and they're saying that many processors are adding about 10% of their blend to their juicing combination is now Mineola.
Really?
Yeah, because it's giving it that, you know, little distinction. And, that's the reason we love it.
Tad more character.
Yes. Such an art. I love that.
That's great. That's great. And such a great flavor. So this is perfect, Earl. Thank you so much. We'll look forward to, as always, talking to you next week and seeing what's going on at the market. And, appreciate you just taking the time to be with us again today.
Wouldn't miss it. Thank you all.
Thanks so
Thank
much,
you,
Earl.
Thanks,
Enjoy
Earl.
Those Mineolas.
Thanks.
So when you're going out and buying Mineolas on the East Coast, they're also called honey bells, and because they look with that little nipple that they have on the top, they actually look like a little bell. But so you want to make sure that they're firm and heavy, you know, in your hand for their size, because that means they'll have the most juice. You want to make sure that they're not soft or wrinkled, even though that the fruit can be loose in the skin. That's why they're easy to peel. You want to make sure you keep them at home in the fridge, or at least in a low temperature, like between 45 and 48. So that's why I'm thinking the fridge is probably best at your house. And you can keep them at room temperature, but they'll only last for about 3 or 4 days. So if you keep them in the fridge, you know, you can keep them for up to 2 weeks. A couple quick tips on Mineolas are about 2 to 4 Mineolas equal a cup of juice. One medium Mineola will give you about 4 teaspoons of zest, which is a pretty decent amount if you're using it for any recipe. And if you want to have the best juice from a Mineola, you want to juice it just before you drink it to get the most vitamins, and you don't want to keep it for more than 48 hours because then it'll start getting bitter. Lastly, since you heard Earl talk about that Mineolas are a cross between a Dunkin' grapefruit and a Dancy tangerine, you may wonder, can I have this with some of the statin medication that people take where they can't have grapefruit. And the recent tests that they did have shown that you can actually eat a Tangelo and still take that medication. So you should always check with your doctor, but that's pretty great. You'll be able to enjoy this even if you're on statin medication. So well, that is what's in season.
That's such a great tip, Mark. Wow.
And yes, do check with your doctor. This is not a health advice, but a taste advice.
Absolutely. Work. Yeah, and Mineolas are definitely where they should be right now.
And I love that name, Mineolas Tangelos.
It's kind of a tongue twister.
Tangelo. Yeah. They're interconnected with many things. Grapefruits and...
Who gave him the name?
Tangelo actually comes from Lake Tangelo. There's an Orlando Tangelo in Florida, and it came from Lake Tangelo in Florida.
Right.
So then the Mineola is a different variety than the Orlando, but that's where the original name came from.
I knew that. And we are back here to an organic conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg.
I'm Mark Pulkey.
And I'm Sita Ronnie Palomar.
Folks, I can tell you right now that I actually know nothing about produce. Helge just lips all this stuff to me. Yeah. And, you know, it just helps me to look good.
I like lipping. we're exploring models of restoring community, connection to self, connections to community and the natural world. Today's topic, redefining community, come together right now. We had Sam McGannon from Bi-Rad Market on the show, and our next guest takes it nationally and even internationally through the Transition Town movement. With us now, Raven Gray calling in from, I believe, Inverness, California. Is that correct? Raven, are you with us?
Yes, I'm here. It's Lagunitas, actually.
It's Lagunitas, and beautiful Lagunitas in Northern California. Raven is the founder of Transition USA, a support organization that supports the Transition Town movement. Raven, we were on a panel together about the future of community, and in that case, particularly new ways of relating to the environment, CO2 emissions, carbon sequestration, just a few months ago. The title was "The Sky Is Us." What, do you remember exactly what the title was?
I don't actually. Yeah, about the sky.
Yeah, the sky is us. And I was impressed with your organization and the great work you were doing. Let's talk about what is a transition town? How do you define it? And where do we have examples of flourishing transition towns right now?
Okay, well, first of all, thank you so much for inviting me on the show. It's a great honor to be here and to be speaking on behalf of the transition movement.
Yes.
You asked me what a transition town is. It's a little challenging to describe because really it is different. It looks different in different places because it grows from place, from the people that live in that place. But in essence, you know, it's easier if I tell you how it starts. You know, it starts with a group of people who are like passionately committed to engaging others in a conversation about what they want their community to look like. And from there, you know, they use a whole bunch of tools and processes and techniques that we've developed in transition to, inspire and engage the community to take ownership of this process and co-create collectively a robust and resilient, fundamentally a radically relocalized community across the board of food, transportation, and energy systems. So it's...
But it's not just a great idea or a great concept. It is actually put into action, yes?
It's definitely action, yeah.
Where around the world do we have, at this point, transition towns that are actually at work?
We have thousands of transition towns across the world. It started in Ireland, so we have a strong presence in Ireland and in the UK. I can't remember how many initiatives there, but several hundred official initiatives and many more that aren't, you know, on the radar screen. They haven't registered with a national hub. And then we have... We have these regional hubs and national hubs in Japan and New Zealand and Australia and the U.S. and Brazil. And within those hubs, there are, you know, like I said, literally hundreds of thousands of transition towns. It definitely is stronger where it was founded in Europe and the U.K., probably mainly because, you know, it's been there longer, but also because they have a different, a more of a we culture, I think, than the U.S. has more of a me culture. And so it spread more rapidly across the UK, also the UK being an island, I think. there's it's more fertile ground for the transition movement.
Yes.
Yeah, we have, I mean, several, right? We have Transition Sonoma County, we have Transition Sebastopol, Transition West Marin, Transition San Francisco, Transition Berkeley. We have a lot of activity right here in the Bay Area.
So, Raven, I know you said that every transition town is a little bit different because it's a collective decision by the community for what they want that community to look like. But can you walk us through what happens in a transition town? Just give us a general idea of what's being created.
Yeah, I can. Like I said, it starts with a small group of people who just come together and say, you know, let's start a conversation about this. Let's put on some awareness-raising events. It might be a film. It might be a World Cafe. It might be a key, you know, some keynote speaker. And then, you know, this process then moves into community ownership as more people come on board and want to get involved. And at some point, you know, working groups tend to form around particular areas of interest. So some people are really interested in food and farming. That's a really strong area in transition movement. And so projects start to emerge, like community supported agriculture schemes or garden shares or seed lending libraries. Other groups might form around alternative currencies and develop maybe energy cooperative, a community-owned cooperative. And then, you know, there's a whole host of what we call reskilling workshops that people put on that really are fundamentally a reversal of the great deskilling of the last 200 years. So we see that the skills that our ancestors had maybe 150, 200 years ago are the sorts of skills we need now for the future, for, you know, creating resilient, robust communities. And there's also, I mean, there's a lot of work around visioning and, like, doing this engagement in visioning where we are, well, where we want to get to in, say, 10, 15, 20 years' time for our community, and then mapping what's already here already in our community and then addressing where the gaps are. So maybe we already have community-supported agriculture here, and that isn't something we need to fill, but there might be a whole bunch of other gaps where we see if there was, you know, a sharp increase in oil prices or an interruption in the supply chain, or a drastic change in climate, you know, how resilient would our community be in terms of supporting its own food and energy systems? And also, you know, we have what we call the 12 steps, and now we call them the 12 ingredients. And some of those are, one of them, for example, is honoring the elders. So that's also a process of transition, is really looking to the elders in our community and saying, well, what was it like, you know, 60 years ago, before we had become such massive consumerists and our food supply chains were more robust, you know, maybe 60, 70 years ago than they are now. And also, I would say in the States, we have a unique honoring of indigenous elders that's really important that we didn't really have back in England. But here, I think it's really important to look to the elders, the indigenous elders of this land, who maybe held, you know, traditional ecological knowledge.
Yes.
Could be really valuable for the future.
All critical parts of community. We are talking with Raven Gray, the founder of Transition US, an organization that is supporting the Transition Town movement today in an organic conversation as we are looking at revitalizing and rethinking and redefining community. I'm Helge Hellberg.
I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And I'm Sitarani Palomar.
And Raven, I was wondering, what is the response in the communities where you've seen that in England and Ireland and around the San Francisco Bay Area? What kind of response have you seen from the traditional community members? Are more and more communities starting to look at, see the value of the transition town movement?
I think definitely yes, because things seem to be coming to a crunch, you know, with the economic crises and, you know, climate change is becoming more onto people's radar screens. And definitely, you know, we had the whole Occupy movement happening. And I think people are really ready for a change. I mean, they're really hungry for, you know, something to change, something to be different, and, you know, a new story. Like, transition tells a really good story of fun and hopefulness and, you know, an enticing story. And I think, you know, people are definitely drawn to that. And, you know, the reason people get involved in transition is because it is deeply nourishing. It's all about building relationships, you know, connecting. Helga said at the beginning, and it's about connecting people to themselves, to each other, and to their place, to the natural world. And I think people are really missing that connection and are really hungry for it. So it is growing. It's a process, and it's evolving, and it's very, very new here, especially in the U.S. Transition U.S. has only been going for 3 years. So there isn't, you know, it isn't a huge response, but there is a groundswell. And I do think that 2012 seems to be the year where people are much more open to change and to building collaborative partnerships with different organizations and people.
Yes, and it's fair to say we have brought this up in the show a couple of times in recent months. The last state election here in the state of California had about a 20% voter turnout. It is fair to say that this democracy is not working because we are not part of it. We are not taking active action. Transition town or not, it is time for this cultural and community repair of embracing the elders, of finding those relationships again, because we are seeing what it's doing when we don't. We are talking with Raven Gray, the founder of Transition US, an organization that supports the Transition Town movement. And Raven, stay with us. We'll take a super quick break, but we have a bunch more questions for you of how towns can learn more and what the services you directly provide. So stay with us, and we'll be right back with more.
Fry Vineyards is America's first organic winery, family-owned and operated since 1980. Dedicated to the highest levels of organic and biodynamic farming, Fry never adds synthetic sulfites or other preservatives to their wines. Fry organic and biodynamic wines include delicious Cabernet Sauvignon, Zinfandel, Syrah, Chardonnay, and Sauvignon Blanc. Fry Vineyards Mendocino County award-winning wines, without added sulfites. Available at grocery stores and online at frywine.com. That's FREYWINE.com.
Produce is ever-changing, seasons coming and going. At Earls Organic, we have been sourcing solely organic produce for over 20 years. Since 1988, Earls Organic Produce has been establishing strong relationships with growers and developing a deep understanding of the seasons, so you can offer the most delicious organic produce to your customers, staff, and clients year-round. For organic produce, visit Earls Organic Produce at earlsorganic.com. That's earlsorganic.com.
There is nothing more restorative than garden-fresh food cooked with skill and served with love. Bowman College has been promoting well-being for more than 20 years by teaching people to cook and eat for health. Launch your career as a nutrition consultant or natural chef and learn to nourish yourself and your loved ones. I'm Ed Bowman, founder and president of Bowman College, Holistic Nutrition and Culinary Arts. Check us out at bowmancollege.org. That's B-A-U-M-A-N, college.org.
Trace, the new signature restaurant at the W San Francisco, is committed to creating an enriching and thoughtful culinary experience. By fusing the vibrant local personality of the Bay Area with a dedication to socially responsible food, Trace ensures all the ingredients are traceable back to their natural origins, locally sourced and sustainable. For reservations, visit trace-sf.com, T-R-A-C-E-S-F.com, or call 415-817-7836.
Do you feel run down, stressed, overweight, or overloaded? Urban Remedy is a delicious 100% organic juice cleansing program designed to jumpstart your body's natural healing and cleansing abilities. This delicious juice feast, created by leading acupuncturist Nika Pasquale, is rich in vital nutrients, minerals, and enzymes, providing you with all the nutritional nourishment you need to thrive, delivered directly to your doorstep. Urban Remedy, a convenient way to boost your energy and balance your body. Place your order today at urbanremedy.com. That's urbanremedy.com.
And we are back here to an organic conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg.
I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And I'm Sita Rani Palomar.
Today's topic is redefining community. And we're hearing all kinds of examples where community is called back into power and into action from a retail store that is so much more in downtown San Francisco in the Mission District to a national and even international movement of the Transition Town movement. With us still is Raven Gray, the founder of Transition US, an organization that supports the Transition Town movement. And we are diving right back into that interview. But first, here is our very own chef, Sita Rani Palomar, with the holistic bite.
Oh, thank you for the sound effect, Helga. So earlier in this episode, we had Mark and Earl talking about miniolas, and we have done a lot of citrus lately, and I've been talking a lot about the health benefits of citrus, and I wanted to find a new angle for this holistic bite. And so when I thought of fun, I thought of children, and when I thought of children, I thought of Jell-O. Does that seem like a logical step to all of you guys? So here is an alternative to creating Jell-O from a packet. You can make Jell-O with agar-agar, which is a sea vegetable. Yes, yeah, so it's a vegan Jell-O. And this sea vegetable, agar-agar, is flavorless, odorless. It looks like these little white flakes, sort of, semi-translucent. And they're dried, and you reconstitute them with hot water. And what they do is they dissolve into the liquid that you're heating them in, and then it tightens up, right? It seizes up like Jell-O. It becomes the consistency of Jell-O. And because you're dissolving it in some kind of liquid, a great thing to do is to make fresh juice and then dissolve the agar in that. And what you get is fresh fruit Jell-O. And we were talking about how delicious the miniolas are because they're sweet and they're tart. And some people are juicing them and putting them into their orange juice to give it a lot of unique characteristic. So why not make a mineral-rich fresh juice miniola agar Jell-O? Because it comes from the sea, it has so many minerals in it. And this time of year, when people are fighting off or recovering from cold and flu season, being nutrient-packed and mineral-packed is really what you want to go for. And also, agar-agar aids in digestion, so it makes a great dessert, too. And if your stomach is a little bit uneasy because you're recovering from the flu, consider doing this as well. So if you want to check out our website, you will find a recipe for a citrus Jell-O on anorganicconversation.com or on our Facebook page, facebook.com/anorganicconversation.
So I have two questions.
Ask
Do you
away.
Have to heat the citrus juice in order to warm it up in order
you
to do the agar agar?
Have to dissolve the citrus, yes, correct. I mean, you have to dissolve it in warm citrus.
In warm mm-hmm. citrus, mm-hmm. and then you stick it in the refrigerator or freezer to
set up, correct.
Okay.
Yes. Yes, it's actually, if you've ever had a Japanese Canton, well, not a lot of people have. Maybe if you've gone to a really authentic Japanese restaurant, you
I've
might have.
I've been to Canton, Ohio.
You know, I'm not so sure that they're hip to the agar agar there. But yeah, check it out and maybe do it with apple juice or maybe do it with vegetable juice if you're feeling really, really adventurous. Mm-hmm. But that's your holistic bite.
Great. Chef Sita Rani Palomar with the holistic bite. And again, all that and more on our Facebook page, either or website, anorganicconversation.com or facebook.com/anorganicconversation, including Mark's wonderful blogs on produce, how to pick it, and what's going on in the world of produce for this week. We are talking about redefining community and cultural repair. With us still on the phone from Lagunitas, Northern California, is Raven Gray, the founder of Transitions US, an organization that supports the Transition Town movement. Raven, thanks again for joining us. And we were talking about how it starts, how a community can become aware of the need to kind of take back democracy or take back the relationships that we all have within the community, within the town we live in, to our economy, to our environment, to the energy policy that is being dictated to us or set in place. With or without our doing, looking at Totnes as one of those classic and highly celebrated towns, can you describe what Totnes, England, has been able to achieve?
Yeah, so Totnes has been going, Transition Town Totnes is the first transition town, and it started in, I think, 2007, and has been, you know, hugely, it's the flagship project basically for the transition movement. And I have no idea what they're up to. They're up to so many different things. They're like, they have a lot of different groups. I know they have their own community energy supply company now, and they have a really strong social enterprise group where they're, you know, developing local businesses, and they've done a lot of urban tree planting, and they're looking at sustainable transport systems and ramping up bicycles and bus routes, and they also have a very strong component working with the local education system and getting the kids. One of the really exciting things I like about Transition Town Totnes is they get the kids involved in, you know, telling stories and drawing pictures and telling their stories to the community of what they want their future, what they see their future could look like. They call it Transition Tales. And they have, you know, the Transition Town Totnes is a very green town anyway. There's a lot of radical people there, so it's very fertile ground for transition. So the projects are just really, you know, they must have like 150 projects going on there at any time.
Including, as you said, public transportation and even currency, right?
Totnes has its own currency. That's right, the Totnes pound. That's been hugely successful as well. They have transition tours where they do renewable energy tours for people. They have a food link project linking. They have this, where they link people who have access to people who have land and don't have time to grow with people who want to grow but don't have access to land. It's like a dating service. A garden there. They have really amazing projects there.
Well, you know, I don't think that it has to be necessarily a radical community that would embrace this. I would think that just about anybody would embrace this. I know in Sonoma they've got this tool sharing site where
like
people
can gardening tools.
Well, everything from construction to gardening, and so people can come in and they can borrow.
Chainsaw.
They can borrow these things and then bring them back, and there's this, and so,
which makes so much sense, right? I mean, you have, if we look at our garages, we have things that we use four times a year, and that's it. And if we shared that with 20 neighbors, we wouldn't miss it.
And we cut down on our impact, right? Because we're not purchasing so many things.
Yeah, and cost wise too. Yeah. I mean, if we shared one budget on gardening and handyman tools, which most of the year are just lying around, that has significant economic impact too.
Yeah, absolutely.
Raven, how does your organization specifically, if somebody was interested in now hearing the show, wanting to start something in their town, what do you directly provide through Transition US?
So, well, we have this really huge website with all kinds of webinars, and we have an online knowledge hub, and we offer transition trainings and, you know, a whole bunch of free resources and YouTube video. We have our own YouTube channel and a bunch of PDFs and lots of free stuff that's just available through our website. I mean, you can also just give us a call and we can help you. But the main thing is to go to our website, www.transitionus.org, and then we have a map on there where you can look and see, well, maybe there's already a transition community starting in my town, and you can see, click on the map and find out who the contact person is and then go to them directly. So, because there's a lot already happening out there.
Yes, and it is about, it brings up a good point about collaboration. Transition Town, even though you are redefining community within that town, it is absolutely not about isolation. Can you talk about that?
What do you mean? It's about working. It's not about putting up the walls, you mean?
Yes.
Like a self-sufficient.
Yeah, often it has that. The movement about self-definition, about finding your own voice, about building community has kind of that aspect of, well, it's about our local currency, it's about our jobs, it's about our energy system. That's all true, but in the greater sense, it's about the collaboration between towns at the same time.
Well, exactly. You just said it. I mean, it's about providing for most of our basic needs at the local level, but of course it's all about relationships. We're all interconnected, all the towns and villages and regions. We're all in this together. So the transition movement is not about shutting down borders. It's about building bridges and building relationships with everybody.
Yes.
You know, there are some things that we still need to trade for. You know, we can't supply everything locally, so that, you know, this is just one response to the challenges we're facing. We also recognize there needs to be a national response and a political response and a response at many different levels. But this is just a piece of the puzzle, if you like.
Yes,
piece
and it's transitionus.org. transitionus.org is That's the website where yeah. people can get inspired and find more information, including the towns next to them that have started some kind of movement already. And what Mark was saying, you know, you might start with a tool sharing program. I think that's amazing. If we just look at what we don't use every day, can somebody else use that? I know in Germany we have whole apartment complexes that use one car or two cars that are part actually of the overall installation of that house. So when an apartment building is built, they are putting either public transportation or a car sharing program within that complex. So it's not owned by anyone. And not started by a person, but it's already part of that house. Brilliant. Or the mm-hmm. bikes in Holland, right?
Mm-hmm.
Has been around that. In Amsterdam. You can just grab a bike and drop it off somewhere else.
Need a bike, take a bike.
Need a bike, great. Take a bike. Yes. Thank you. Wonderful work, Raven Gray. Again, the founder of Transition US, an organization that supports the Transition Town movement throughout the US. And Transition Towns at this point are all the way around the world. Thanks for joining us today, Raven.
Thank you so much for having me on the show.
Our pleasure.
Yeah, you know, Helga, I was looking at the site, and it's saying that the Transition Town is going on in 34 countries, in 32 states. It's been translated into 13 languages and has 415 official initiatives worldwide and has 111 official U.S. initiatives. So, it's happening.
It's time.
Yeah.
Wonderful. This is the time for the mailbag. I think we're almost out of time. Send us your comments and questions and suggestions to share@anorganicconversation.com. We love to hear from you. We love to hear your thoughts about Transition Towns and whatever else may go on and be going on in your life. Again, share@anorganicconversation.com. Also, join us on Facebook. We're just about to break the 10,000 number.
Woohoo!
Yes, and that's facebook.com/anorganicconversation for blogs and recipes and more information around the shows and more resources.
So do we have time for the organic moment today?
I hope so, yes. I think so. Yes, and I'm shifting gears. It's a little organic moment that I had last week looking at my dog Timber. Timber is getting older. While his cuteness is still increasing, his movement is slowing down. He's 70 years old in human years. And although it does not show to the eye of a stranger that we meet in the park, it is obvious and in my face for me every day. I'm not prepared to let him go. No way, not yet. I do have moments in which I can imagine needing to say goodbye, but the bitter sweetness, the love and loss I feel for this creature is so overwhelming that I bring myself back to reality immediately, only to know that the day will come one day. Love. The more you love, the more you win and lose. No relationship will last. At least not in this physical shape and form. Do not hold back, they say, of course. That is the reason that we are all here, but by God, with it comes the needing to be able to let go. How do you prepare? And is there any preparation for it? We've got to live like we are dying. If you meet death fully lived, I can only hope it will be easier, like dropping your friend off after a full day of fun at the beach, exhausted from laughing and playing all day, grateful for the time spent well. So I will grab Timber again this weekend and head out to see the waves, and next weekend too, so that when the day comes to part ways, that we may both be fulfilled and fun-filled and exhausted from lots of days with sandy paws and a dog's life well-lived. Really, that's all we've got, to live and leave a life well-lived.
And that was this week's edition of An Organic Conversation. Thanks for listening.
An Organic Conversation is a production of the Organic Media Network. Associate producer, Kristen Ponger. Studio engineer, Robert Costa. Production assistant, Lauren Mulcahy.
If you missed parts of this show or for any other episode, visit iTunes or anorganicconversation.com.
We are your hosts, Helga Hellberg.
Mark Mulcahy.
And Sitarani Palomar.
And we will be back right here, same place, same time as always, next week. See you then.
Catch
a Dylan song or some eclipse of the moon. Let an angel swing and make you swoon. Then you will see, you will see. Then he said, here's a riddle for you. Find the answer. There's a reason for the world. You and I. Come on.